We now shift our focus to the question of natural family planning in a world where contraception is very widely accepted and encouraged, and where a certain mythology of contraception is being embraced even to the extent of attempting to warp and shape science around a prevailing point of view. This presentation will be divided into three parts, which you can see represent the divisions of the web page that we're looking at. First of all, we'll be looking at a very recent brochure put out by the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops on the subject of contraception, entitled Life Matters Contraception. This can be downloaded as a PDF, either from the course website or from the USCCB. It's a very comprehensive collection of texts which challenge some prevailing assumptions and which raises some very important and controversial questions, especially concerning the effects of certain of the drugs used in oral contraceptives, which we'll speak a little more about as we go on. The second thing we'll be looking at is a brief look at the ongoing controversy concerning drug effects, and especially controversy regarding the effect of progesterone and progestins, progesterone-related compounds that are found in oral contraceptives and in injectable and implantable contraceptives. And finally, we will look at the current website of the Food and Drug Administration on the subject of contraception, not because it contains information with which we would at all agree, but rather because this is information which people will very widely be using as truth, which they will regard as accepted facts, and we need to be aware of what is being stated there and how that has changed just in relatively recent times. And we begin with the USCCB's brochure, which raises some very important points that are very frequently neglected by those who discuss family planning and especially who are pro-contraception. And notice in item 1.1, and here again I have added my own numbering to these sections to make it easier for us to refer to them as in the course of this lecture. If we look down at the bullet points, the hard facts that they mention, which are rarely discussed by those who promote contraception, which are basically under the category of contraception has not prevented unwanted pregnancies, and it most certainly has not decreased. In fact, it has increased the spread of sexually transmitted diseases, which makes a fair amount of sense when one considers that the myth of contraceptive efficacy and its invariable success, which is, of course, a myth, tends to promote a mindset that encourages earlier and more frequent sexual relationships among the young. Notice the depressing facts in regard to use statistics, the first three bullet points. 1 in 3 teen girls will become pregnant within 2 years of initiating sexual activity, even while using contraceptives. And then the second point, almost half of low-income cohabiting teens using the pill and 72% of those using condoms as their primary method of birth control will become pregnant within 12 months. And 65% of women who reported unplanned pregnancy in a major French survey were using contraception. And then I've highlighted and put in red the very important conclusion, which is not the conclusion of the bishops, but rather of those who promote contraception, that pills are now regarded as an outdated method and that its perfect use is regarded as impossible for most humans. The consequence of this is that there is an increasing push now for the use of methods that are regarded as more reliable, for implantable, for injectable, and compounds, and for things like the contraceptive patch, which provides much larger dosages of the medication than would be found in oral contraceptives. And unfortunately, a recent push for the increasing use of intrauterine devices as a first-line contraceptive modality. I believe we mentioned this before. This is rather astonishing given the history of intrauterine devices, but one can understand that for those who believe that contraception is essential and who are now looking at the rather abysmal statistics, their conclusion would be that people cannot be relied upon to use any method than those which are done to them and do not involve conscious control. That these methods involve increased side effects and dangerous risks is something that is increasingly downplayed in the mass media. What is highlighted here in the last bullet points and in the text that I have highlighted is what we've just said, namely that contraception has not decreased either unplanned pregnancy or abortion, and in fact in countries where it was legalized and where where it can be documented in terms of its availability and legalization, there was a very significant increase in the abortion rate. So the problems associated with contraception become far more widespread and complex than simply the question of avoiding pregnancy. And particularly highlighted in number two, the issue that people do tend to take risks when they believe they can avoid negative consequences through technology. This is the danger of the myth of something like safe sex, which of course does not exist if one's relying upon devices. And if one reads the medical literature, it is made explicit that there is no such thing as safe sex. That although things like the condom will decrease the incidence of HIV, it's impossible to know whether or not one has not inadvertently increased the incidence by encouraging people who would otherwise have chosen to abstain from intercourse to engage in intercourse, imagining that somehow sex can be safe through the use of barrier devices. But we'll come to that more specifically a bit later on. Again, highlighted in red in number 1-3, it's clear that contraception, even though it does not reduce the rate of pregnancy, certainly does increase the spread of sexually transmitted diseases. And as we have noted and will note again, this is also associated with a decrease in fertility in women who have multiple sexually transmitted diseases and who then end up with infections that result in scarring, particularly in the fallopian tubes. More controversial in our own day, in section 1.4, and I don't intend to go into this in any detail, is the question of the link between hormonal contraceptives and breast cancer. The so-called meta-analysis of large studies that have been done over a number of years have been interpreted in a variety of ways, and again, in the mass media, it's been reported periodically that there is no association with an increased risk, or that there may be a slight increase, or that the increase is for those who are older and who make use of oral contraceptives, or then conversely, occasionally, data that suggests that those who begin oral contraceptives when they are very young are at higher risk. The data is, to put it bluntly, conflicting and tends to be used by whoever claims to want to prove a point in their own way. The point is pointed out here, the drugs that are used, particularly, and as was noted particularly in number 1.4, the link between hormonal contraceptives and various forms of cancer resulted in the World Health Organization classifying synthetic estrogen and progestin as carcinogenic to humans. Now, again, these classifications and the data on which they are based are constantly shifting, and there are very, very powerful political lobbies pushing for the removal of anything that suggests the negative side effects of oral contraceptives. Nevertheless, the way in which these drugs are assessed, as this handout very clearly points out, is as if one were comparing them with the effects of something like end-stage cancer or other life-threatening disorders. In other words, pregnancy is seen as being a dangerous and life-threatening state, and therefore dangerous drugs can be permissible in its treatment or in avoiding it. And I'll leave you to read the rest of the brochure yourself. I'd like to drop down now to number two, the ongoing progesterone controversy. And again, without going into detail, a New York Times article, which is available on this page of the course website for you to look at if you wish to do so, and a publication from a national agency on the subject of contraception represent the kind of very strong political effort that is being made to remove the claim that progestins are responsible for preventing implantation as an effort to downplay or deny that these drugs have any kind of abortifacient effect. The first is a kind of linguistic, or you might say semantic, effort, which is to deny that interfering with implantation could be regarded as an abortion at all. The definition of abortion is shifted to an event that can only take place after implantation. Nevertheless, the significance and the effects of these drugs still perplexes people, as well it may, and therefore there's an effort to try to prove that, in fact, these drugs do not have this kind of an effect. Again, the issue is extremely complex. The new science or data on which it claims to be based is, in fact, generally not new at all. And rather than attempting to go through a long and complex refutation of this material, I've simply included here the relevant section from Lentz's Comprehensive Gynecology, which represents not material which finds its way into the mass media, but the textbooks which are used to train physicians and specialists in these areas. And notice that the effect of progestins in oral contraceptives is very specifically listed as including reducing the likelihood of implantation. This is stated twice and is made very clear. As we'll see, the FDA has removed these references from the relevant sections of its website, but this has not affected the more scientifically oriented textbooks or their authors, who are certainly in a very good position to assess the, quote, new science, unquote. And if we move down now to the contraceptive technology section, number 3, rather than simply repeat it with my own obvious biases, I've simply downloaded the relevant material from the FDA website. This is exactly what you will find if you go to the links that are given on this page in number 3, either in the form of the site itself or in the form of the PDF document, which they would encourage people to download. Let me note here, as I've noted in the introduction to this text, not only the obvious fact that this is in no sense congruent with a Catholic moral tradition, the interesting fact also that there are no references to fertility awareness or natural family planning methods on the FDA site, which in fact there are in the Center for Communicable Diseases site, but which site does not go into or does not attempt to go into as much information on mechanism of action. The only reference to fertility awareness that I could find on the FDA site was in the section connected with frauds and scandals. If we look down now at the text itself, FDA Office of Women's Health Birth Control Guide, notice that it is divided up into 5 sections: barrier methods, hormonal methods, emergency contraception, implanted devices, and permanent methods. And I'd like for us to look briefly at each of these. Here, too, I have added my own numbering to this. The bracket 3-point bracket is because this is the third section on this web page, and I'll refer to the sections by those numbers. They're not, of course, found in the original, nor are the numbers that follow that. I've attempted to make it easier for us to follow during the course of this lecture. Beginning with number 3.1, barrier methods, and 3.11, the male condom. This is perhaps the most ancient form of birth control commonly used, other than coitus interruptus or withdrawal, which is notoriously ineffective since there is such a thing as pre-ejaculatory seminal fluid, which can contain a very high concentration of sperm. The male condom is perhaps the most commonly used form of birth control. And notice if you drop down to the section on chance of getting pregnant with typical use, this is a use method statistic, and that's done throughout this site, which is very intriguing. Rather than attempting to give ideal statistics, they're giving the actual numbers of people who attempt to use it, even those who use it relatively unsuccessful. And notice that they report an 18% failure rate of actual use. And that's very important for us to note, that if it's an 18% failure rate in preventing pregnancy, one has to presume that there will be a very similar failure rate in preventing anything else associated with male ejaculate, including sexually transmitted disease, and that would also apply certainly to HIV/AIDS. So, again, although one can say that from the perspective of preventive medicine or public health, that the use of condoms does decrease the incidence of HIV as contrasted with people who use nothing at all. For those who therefore imagine that the use of such a device will prevent or protect them from AIDS, they are now having a very close to 1 in 5 chance of infecting themselves. We can move down to number 1.2, the female condom. I don't think we need to spend a lot of time with this. This is certainly not a very widely used modality. Number 1.3, diaphragm with spermicide. They're emphasizing here that a spermicidal jelly is essential if one is to have any kind of effectiveness with this modality. And indeed, there is a 12% failure rate for this in actual use. Notice also that they've mentioned the existence of toxic shock syndrome, a terrible infection which can occur, and the body's reaction to the organisms which infect it, that can be extremely dangerous, and which is a definitely known side effect of leaving a diaphragm in for longer than is recommended. The so-called sponge with spermicide is not particularly effective. If you drop down to the use statistics, it's 12 to 24% ineffective. The cervical cap, which fits more tightly around the cervix, also has a significant risk of toxic shock and has a rather dismal success rate at preventing pregnancy of about 17 to 23% a failure rate. Spermicidal cream alone is even worse and is, in a sense, hardly recommendable. When one then moves to hormonal methods, number 3.2, the oral contraceptive, as we've noticed in our earlier section in this course, one of the primary factors in the so-called sexual revolution of the 60s. It's well noted that if this medication combination were being used for anything except contraception, it would probably be restricted to very severe and life-threatening illnesses because of the very severe side effects associated with it. Under less common side effects, if one drops down, there is noted the fact that it is rare, but some women will have blood clots, heart attacks, or strokes, and of those, some will die. And as I've noticed, although there is a very concerted and ongoing effort to obscure the mechanism of action of contraceptives, it has generally been said, and as you notice, the material that I quoted from the gynecological textbook above certainly supports, that the more progesterone the compound contains, the greater the likelihood is that there will be an effect that prevents implantation, and therefore an effect that the Catholic Church would regard as abortifacient. This website more or less denies that in section 3.22 on the mini pill, which is a progestin-only containing pill. Note that in 3.2.3, there's reference to an extended or continuous use oral contraceptive, and the use of this particular kind of medication would mean that a woman would not have any menstrual periods at all, or would have very few. The usual form of the combined oral contraceptive is to have a few pills that actually don't contain the active agents in them, which causes what appears to be a menstrual period, but in fact, since there has been no proper development, no very careful development according to the normal hormonal cycle of the woman's endometrium, or if the pill is doing what it is claimed that the manufacturers claim that it does, no ovulation, then in fact it isn't really a normal menstrual period, it's a kind of period of artificial bleeding. which this particular kind, the items described in 3.2.3, do not have. Then 3.2.4, the patch, which is being much more widely encouraged because it's felt that people can't be relied upon to take pills. Notice that I've highlighted in red, this does expose one to higher levels of estrogen compared to most oral contraceptives, and not only estrogen. And although it is stated it is not known if serious risks such as blood clots and strokes are greater with the patch, it seems extremely likely because the dosages of these medications is much higher since it's being absorbed through the skin than taken in a controlled dosage by mouth. And the vaginal contraceptive ring is simply one means by which hormone is diffused throughout the body. In this case, it's placed in the mucous membrane of the woman's reproductive tract. And then moving on to 3.2.6, hormones can be injected and remain for a long period of time. Not listed here because it's put in another section would be implantable progestins, which are placed under the skin, rather sort of matchstick size little rods that then release the hormone over a protracted period of time, and obviously would have to be, well, cannot be very effectively or efficiently removed once they've been placed. That will be mentioned a little further on. Then in emergency contraception, here, there is finally the admission that these medications, which use progestin, may also work, which I've highlighted, by preventing fertilization of the egg or by preventing attachment or implantation to the womb. So there is an admission here of what politically is being pushed strongly against, and it's not unlikely that the admission that implantation is prevented will be removed from this website at some point. But when I downloaded it just a couple of weeks ago, it was still here. Then Ella, an extremely controversial medication, which is described here as possibly also working by preventing implantation, thus being abortifacient. And again, these drugs will be permitted and even required to be available under the new health mandate. If one looks at item 3.4, implanted methods, intrauterine devices, which we have mentioned before, among the very earliest forms of contraceptives that were available beginning in the 60s. These are being encouraged because they're regarded as effective, but notice the risks, not just cramps and irregular bleeding, but pelvic inflammatory disease, which is an infection that may well affect infertility, which is also admitted, that the IUD may become stuck or may actually perforate the uterus and thus induce a life-threatening infection. There are other IUDs, number 3.4.2, that contain progestin that are coated with hormone, so they not only work by irritating the lining of the uterus and thus preventing implantation. However, notice that there's an effort to avoid even mentioning the effect on implantation in the IUD with progestin section, even though that's basically how the IUD works, by irritating the lining of the uterus. We mentioned implantable rods already. Notice that they can be used for up to 3 years, and of course, once they're in, it's extremely difficult to get them out, or even if they're removed, to know exactly when the drug will cease being absorbed by the body from that which was left behind in the subcutaneous tissue. And under 5, permanent methods, vasectomy for a man, 3.5.1. And sterilization for women, 3.5.2. Notice, and if you could just drop down to sterilization under 3.5.3, there's a very great irony in the fact that one of the newer methods of sterilizing women consists of imitating what happens in nature when a woman gets a very bad infection that causes scarring of the fallopian tubes. Medicine has now imitated this by creating devices that cause scarring in the fallopian tubes and thus can render a woman infertile. So that's effectively what number 3.5.3 consists of at the present time. And again, I'll simply conclude with the remark that on this website, which is very widely viewed, very widely recommended for women considering what they should do about regulating their fertility, that on this website there is no description of or recommendation of any kind of natural family planning.